This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
The following show deals with sensitive subject matter, and I'd like to offer a gentle warning to our listeners that in this episode, there is mention of domestic violence, child abuse, and suicide. If you or someone you know is experiencing abuse or talking about suicide, you can dial 211 or visit 211ontario.ca to find resources and helplines. As we always say, there can be no bliss unless we're safe, secure, and protected. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm joined by Rose Barroso, entrepreneur, luxury real estate broker, award-winning home builder, and now author of this new book, Indestructible, Transforming Survival into Success. This memoir is excellent. It's a page-turner. And before we meet her to unpack all of it, let me tell you a little bit more about her. So Rose Barroso has built an empire in two of the most male-dominated industries in the world, luxury real estate and custom home construction. Now she's breaking new ground as an author with her powerful debut memoir, Indestructible, Transforming Survival into Success, which was released in the month of January 2026 through Sutherland House Experts. Born in Portugal and raised in Toronto, Barroso's story is not one of privilege or of any easy breaks from start to finish. Abandoned by those meant to protect her and raised in a shattered family, she learned easily and early on that survival meant building walls around her heart, around her dreams, and around her very sense of self. But walls couldn't silence the echoes of self-doubt, fear, and rage that lingered long after the bruises had faded. Indestructible, the book, rips the mask off a life built in defiance of deep trauma. With raw vulnerability and unapologetic strength, surprising strength, I want to really talk to her about this, Rose Barroso exposes the hidden scars of her childhood and reveals how pain shaped her, tested her, and ultimately forged her into a tenacious woman who conquered her inner demons and the boardroom. This is more than a memoir. It's a battle cry for anyone who's ever been told they would amount to nothing. It's a roadmap for women in spaces where they're underestimated, overlooked, and undervalued. And it's proof that healing doesn't make you soft. It makes you unstoppable. The strongest women are often built from the hardest truths. The deepest wounds can produce the strongest spirits. And as Rose says, healing doesn't make you soft. It makes you unstoppable. Rose Barroso, congratulations on the book and welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you so much. So nice to meet you.
Rose, you had an extremely tumultuous childhood, being shipped off as a very young girl, 4 years old, to live with your grandparents in Portugal, you and your sister, while your younger brother was given to an aunt. And so you were all separated.
Correct.
And I could really feel from the way you wrote what your life was like and how you felt like living that life with your grandparents. What are your memories of being a young girl in Portugal when you first arrived there without your mother, without your father who had disappeared, without your brother who was shipped off to an aunt, with just your sister who you were always very close to, but nonetheless, there you are in another country in Europe, halfway across the world. What are your memories of that as a young little girl?
I don't think I have a lot of memories to speak of. The memories they're very faded, and a lot of times I can't even, or maybe I don't want to believe that they're real. So I'm very selective in what I do remember and what I do talk about. I try to make excuses for everyone so I could potentially understand why, but they were just excuses, right? Living with my grandparents, it was probably the nicest period in my life because they were indeed a couple that loved each other. And today in my head, I still talk to my grandmother because she was a powerhouse way back when, right? Mm-hmm. But not having a family, not having a mom or a dad that even cared to see me, that was trauma by itself. I wanted role models. I wanted to sit and chat. I just wanted to do mom-daughter things that I really never got to do, even when I was a big girl. But I don't have a lot of memories. I just remember always being sad. I remember wanting attention, and I would do what I would say now, very silly things, very dangerous things. But for me, it was, how do I feel alive? How do I know I'm seen? How do I get people to talk to me? I don't care if it's to reprimand me, to compliment me. I couldn't care what it was, but I just needed that.
You desperately sought attention, which is so normal. And I sense that your sister, who you've always loved and adored, you were like her protector. But so was the whole family. She was the golden girl because of her eyesight problems. She got a lot of attention that you didn't get. So in order to get that attention, and I'm a life coach, so I so understand what was happening here, that you started to act out, get into skirmishes with some of your classmates at school, including the scene where you hurt the girl and somehow escaped punishment, throwing the rock at the boy. But then it was stealing the bicycle when all hell broke loose. And I think your grandmother gave you a pretty intense spanking. Yes. And you never, I think, expected that in a million years. She would sort of look at you almost with this drool, like, okay, she was on your side, but that's when it all sort of...
That was straw that broke the camel's back. And even with my grandfather, he was never one that he was violent in any way. He would raise his hand and yell, and you're like, oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And
then nothing, yeah.
And with my grandmother, she was very, very strict, and we knew that. We knew when she was not happy, and we knew our place, and we knew how to apologize, and we knew how to make things better. But it was that cup that it's just a drop, and it's just a drop. And she was trying to be patient with me and be kind with me, but there was no stopping me. And everything just kept getting worse to the point where the broomstick broke on my back.
Yeah, totally. That was like just, that was her breaking point.
Yes.
But I think that one of your breaking points was about your very special relationship with your grandfather's mother, who was a gentle and compassionate presence in your life. Yeah. And I felt that she loved you unconditionally.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, she did.
Yes.
She did.
And that she gave you this feeling of utmost importance and specialness, that she chose you, selected you as the very special person. And I wonder if that stood you in good stead all throughout your life, knowing that you had that relationship.
I did. And I think my grandmother almost took that lead that my great-grandmother had for me and kind of said, well, if she saw something in her, perhaps I need to pay more attention or be kinder or gentler. But my great-grandmother, there was something so special about her that I cannot explain. And I can't remember her face. But I can remember my grandmother's face very well.
Yeah.
But for me, I just remember a gentle...
Yeah, of course.
I remember a gentle body, a gentle soul.
Yes.
That would take the time just to never reprimand me, simply to say, let's talk about it. It shouldn't have been done. You shouldn't have done it. Now you've done it. Now we need to make amends. Can't do it again. It was never, oh, now the consequences are going to be, and it wasn't. It was it was just easy. It was such a peaceful place to be with her. And somehow, I remember the day that she passed so clearly when I can't remember so much more. I knew there was, the universe was telling me something, and I was trying everything. Yeah. Running away, hiding on the roof. And I'm like, I can't verbalize.
Couldn't face it. The terrible, terrible tragedy where the motorcyclist hit her. And you knew, it's so interesting that you knew. I knew that you knew. And that's why you were hiding on the roof.
Yeah.
You couldn't face it, that this person. And it's so interesting. Like, if this was ever made into a movie, which it could be, by the way, you know, that character would be a very small character in this huge film, right?
Yeah.
But a very, very important one.
Very important.
In the life of Rose, right? In the relationship with Rose.
Yeah. She taught me how to find quiet in my head how to stay in the moment and think, which as a kid, for me, there was no thinking. It was just doing, doing, doing. And, oh, well, I'll face the consequences after. And so be it. But with her, it was more about, let's think, let's talk, let's just rest. That's everything I remember about her.
You don't need much more than that.
No.
When things began to get crazy and your grandparents couldn't handle caring for you anymore, they sent you from Portugal back to Toronto to live with your mother and stepfather. And I really noted as the reader how you had always been empowered to fight back physically and to fight back with spunk and even be like a little bit intimidating to people who were hurting you or, right? You were that person. And suddenly you're confronted by this very intimidating 6 foot plus presence, male chauvinistic, evil, as we later discover, evil, evil person. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you lost your voice and you stifled your screams.
Yeah.
And I'm not even getting to what's happening later, which we'll get to. But at age 15, what was it like for you living in this environment when you had had the spunkiness and the empowerment and you lost it? Well, in the presence of this abuser.
Yeah, I lost my spunkiness, I think, at around 11, 12, just because in my head, I couldn't understand somebody being so horrible. I couldn't understand how he could abuse my mother in front of me and blame her and blame me. It was just, it was hell on earth. And I thought, if I minimize myself, if I make myself invisible, I won't draw that short end, and perhaps I won't cause her to be beat for whatever reason it decided today. If I find a corner and if I just do as he needs, then the days will go by and I'll be okay and I'll find my day where I get out of here and live my life. So for me, it was more of, again, protection is if I disappear, then she'll be okay. She won't be blamed for something that perhaps I did, that I make noise, that I leave a cup somewhere that I shouldn't have. The toast was a little too brown. I don't know. But for me, it was very much, if I become invisible, then the days will pass and I'll be okay.
I understand this. And you write about how you finally did start fighting back because you were so, even though you were so consumed with guilt, wondering if your presence in this household was the catalyst for all this turmoil, but you talked about how you hated being back home, how it felt unsafe, and you finally started fighting back. Mm-hmm. And how did that manifest itself when you did start fighting back?
Well, when I started fighting back, it was my mother not even understanding if she should thank me or apologize to me, because now it was me getting beat and it was my head going through a couple of drywall pieces. Mm. It was just more of, Rose, you shouldn't have. Rose, why did you? Rose, you shouldn't have. I'm like, okay. Well, so I don't know what I just did, but okay. But it's not okay for me to look at you and see another bruise and see another black eye and be in, like, at that point, understand, we lived in an apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, that the walls are thin as paper. You breathe too loud, you hear it.
Of course.
So for my mother to lock herself or him to lock her in the room with him.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's not like I couldn't hear. I could close the door. I could put my head under a pillow, but I could hear what was going on. So when I said this is enough and somebody has to say something, then it was me. Then it was me taking the beat. Right. And then when my sister arrived back in Canada as well,
yes,
I was like, okay, you're not going to do that to her. Like, I've been trying to protect my mother. Now I'm going to protect my sister. And to a point where my sister
left.
She couldn't.
She left. She went, which you also had to pay for. You had to pay for all of this. It was awful. And I love, Rose, that you square off a section of the book on page 27. Important stuff. Saying to parents reading this, Please, I urge you, do not stay with an abusive partner for the sake of your children. It's an unhealthy situation for everyone involved, and children should never have to hear or witness their mother being beaten or verbally abused, because such experiences instill feelings of weakness, helplessness, and often hatred. And you go on to say, abuse in the home is more damaging than divorce. You might as well be divorced, because to have to live through this, it's going to also perpetuate the cycle of abuse. It's a very, very important thing that you're doing here in the middle of the book. It's like you're stepping outside of your own memoir to give this very, it's almost like a public service announcement. But I really appreciated that, because and this is so important for anyone listening who is aware of any kind of abuse. And then it did not stop there. Just short of your 17th birthday, you began to become sexually abused by your stepfather. One day when your mother wasn't home, the beatings and bruises that have been going on became sexual abuse. You were barely 17. I can't imagine what you went through when he said, let this be our secret. And I have to ask you, what prevented you from speaking up at that time to your mother at this time? Because this went on for years.
Yeah.
You had always cried out in the past, but you were silenced. You were completely paralyzed.
Mm-hmm. I was paralyzed. I was paralyzed because I had never heard of a situation like that. I had never been told. I had never read. I had never. And at first, in my head, it was like, if I tell, this is going to be my fault. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be sent to Portugal. I'm going to lose my mother again. I don't want that. I just want her to understand she can leave. And then it was my grandparents, her parents would say, yeah, your mother just keeps making the wrong choices. She keeps choosing the wrong man. She's always a magnet. And this is the wrong man again. And they were not aware of the physical abuse. So who am I to tell? I can't tell, right? And then my mother would complain to me every time she had a moment. She would say, oh, I can never divorce this man. Your grandparents would die. They told me that this was wrong. I still went ahead. I can't leave. It's a second divorce. It's a
humiliation.
Yeah.
And you're bearing all of this and this led you to feelings of suicide. You thought about it because you had nowhere to turn to. You described being scared and depressed and living in a fog, and suicide seemed to be the only path. You start to cut yourself. You did all these things. And what finally that day in the book, I'll never forget that part in the book where you screamed, and that's a very courageous, brave thing to do. When you screamed and had the courage to say, no, no, never again.
I think I had gone through all the options that could potentially happen in my life. And it was, I have to kill myself. I have to run away. I have nothing. Where am I going to end up? On the street? I can. I don't want to go back to Portugal. My grandparents are too old now. I have my sister here that one day I'll talk to her again. That was all my thought process. This man needs to be punished. He needs to be punished. He needs to go to jail. Even though I was praying for some sort of a ghost, an angel, you know, it all sounds silly now, but at that point it was, okay, are there ghosts? Then I need a friend. I need to talk to somebody. Are there angels? Well, come on. I need to talk to somebody.
Show yourself, please. Celestial beings, come to me. I get that. I really do.
So for me, it was, I've now exhausted this, exhausted that. I can't. My marks were dropping, and that is something that I couldn't allow to happen to me, to my life, because I had made a promise that I was going to be better than everyone I knew at the moment. I was going to be able to find my safety, my independence, and my happiness. So I had exhausted everything in my head. And when the moment it became different, because he had never done that, I said, I can't do it. I'll go live on the street, but I can't do it. And that's when I screamed. And in my head, I was screaming. I did not know I had that loud of a voice. I did not know how it was going to come out. I didn't.
Wow.
It was like, I got to do something.
Guttural. It was survival.
Yeah.
Right? It was you having to survive.
Yeah.
And he still abused you, and you barfed your guts out. And then your mother, I also got the sense that she just didn't protect you, though.
No.
And there was a narcissism.
Yeah.
And it was about her. And yeah. She's supposed to be the mother. And I'm not talking about later on when you become the mother and she's the daughter in your reverse roles, which happens a lot in mother-daughter relationships eventually.
Yeah.
But not even that point, just all throughout from the time she abandoned you as a little girl to even during this. And you think, did she not see the bruises?
Yeah.
Did she not see my locked doors? You would lock your door of your bedroom.
But also understand, like, I have a daughter who's turning 20 in a week. And if her hair changes, I'm going to ask what happened. If her clothing, if I've never seen a piece or...
Yeah.
I don't know. I just have questions because it's not me, the protector. It's just mom intuition.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So if I saw my daughter come out of the house with a turtleneck, long sleeve wool sweater and 20 something degree, I would sit her down. I'm like, I'm sorry, what's going on?
Yeah, totally.
This is not normal.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. To find places at school where I would hide so I could study, but I would hide so I wouldn't come home.
Of course.
And she would later say, why did you come home so late from school? I'm like, because I have to study. And as a mom, why would you not say, why can't you study at home? What's wrong with home? Are you not comfortable? Something going on?
Of course.
But these are questions I've always asked.
This is normal. I so understand what you're saying that, you know, sometimes having a hard childhood or a difficult parent makes you a better parent.
Oh.
And it's the one blessing.
Yeah.
It's the one blessing of the tragedy or the despair that you and the grief that you've gone through is that you become. So I see that in you as a great blessing that you had was the kind of parent that you are.
Yeah.
And believe me, this doesn't take away from any of the trauma and the horrors that you experience. But one beautiful golden glimmer of it all is the kind of mother you are and the fact that you know, that you get it.
Yeah. My 20-year-old will still hold my hand in public. She will look for my hand to hold.
Wow.
My son, 17, who is 6'2", every once in a while decides he needs to sit on my lap just to talk to me. And somewhere up here. And I'm like, oh, hey.
Isn't that wonderful?
Well, yeah.
Look at the wonderful job that you're doing. And you did all of this having this evil, this man was actually really evil. Your mother was just narcissistic and had problems, but this man was evil.
Yeah.
And then she leaves. This was the part I almost couldn't read it. I almost had to close the book for a second. When she goes on vacation and says, you're going to be the one who has to tell him basically that I'm leaving him and I'm going on vacation so that you're alone with him. And you know what that's going to incur and the wrath and indignation and anger that's going to incur. And she put you in that position. But you went to the beauty salon, your mother's beauty salon for an escape to sleep. And the hard floor was still a welcome escape and a relief from the turmoil and the devastation you were going through.
It was. But even being left to tell him that, I was okay with, because to me it was, she made a decision. She's ready to go. And that stops everything. So if I have to tell him she's leaving, so be it. I'm fine with it. You
and the
see
only,
how I look at things?
Yeah. Yes. You always see the positive and you always turn things around and you find survival in the worst. I wrote something at the beginning of my script. You said that your own sense of empowerment came out of necessity when survival was the only option. You had no choice but to shift and rise.
Yeah.
All throughout your life. This is what has been your savior.
Yeah.
All throughout your life, you've had this ability. And it's pretty, pretty incredible.
Thank you.
So tell us what really motivated you to write your brainchild, Indestructible. What inspired you to finally sit down and go, I have to write this book? Don't answer that just yet, Rose. When we come back, we're going to hear all about Rose Barroso's gripping memoir, Indestructible, Transforming Survival into Success. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740. And just before the break, I asked you, Rose, what motivated you to write your memoir, Indestructible, Transforming Survival into Success?
I didn't. Well, I did and I didn't. How it all started, and I think I speak about it at the very beginning, I was reading a book called Napoleon Hill, and the book just speaks about some very successful families and people in the States. And I remember being on the beach and talking to my husband. And I'm like, oh my God, I love this book because I've always been a reader. And I'm like, oh, because of this and look at this and he suffered this and he got here and he suffered that and he got here. And I was just like spewing all this information. And I said something about my past to my husband. And he looked at me and he said, well, you belong in the book. I'm like, in the book? Oh God, I'm not a billionaire. And he says, but you have such an amazing story to tell. Maybe you should write a book. And I just laughed at it. And the next night he says, I know you laughed, but would you not consider? I said, I'm not a writer. I don't even know how to start. And he says, hey, I'm here. I'll support you. But I think you should write a book about it. Right. And I can tell you what's in the book. My husband knows about 80% of it only. He has not read the book. I asked him to wait as long as he could to read the book. I want him to hear from people like you what I did. So when he reads it, you'll hear your voice, not mine. So the reason why I finished it, that's how I started the book. And when I came to a specific chapter, I had to stop because no matter how much I wrote, it seemed to me I was in protection mode again, and I didn't feel it was fair to me. So I would stop and I'd come back a few months later and try to get that chapter finished again. And it just went on for about a year or so. And then what motivated me, what lit that final fire was one day my daughter came into my office. And my daughter's very much like me. She's super spunky and I love her for that. And she said to me, Mommy, I have a friend who is going through a few things and I'm trying to help her, but I know this is way over my head. Can I invite her over so she can talk to you? I said, oh God, yeah. Huh. So she came over and she talked to me about this boy she was seeing, the school, the teachers, her dreams. And we talked for hours.
Wow.
And that young lady, a few months later, was back at her house. And she said, Rose, I just have to say, I left that idiot. I did what you told me, because there was a point that I said, if you're not strong enough to speak to your counselor at school, I'll be your mom. I'll step in. I won't be nice, but I'll step in. And she goes, let me see what I can do. So she was telling me, I've been able to speak with a counselor. She's now guiding me toward the criminal law route. But that same year, my daughter hosted end of year get together. And the girls all came for the afternoon. They all went into the pool. My husband and I decided we're going to go for dinner. They're fine. They're old enough. And when we came back at 1 a.m, I had 2 girls sitting on my couch waiting for me. They needed to talk to me. And more or less the same things, a little different, but you get what I'm saying. And I started thinking, I don't want to write the book as a sad and look at my life. Oh my God, this was so terrible. You know, I learned so much that I can now empower, that I can now guide, lead, push, be somebody's role model that I never had. And that's when I said to my husband and myself, I got to finish this book. I got to find that power in me to just finish that chapter because I know the rest is great. So again, what led me to write it and what led me to finish are a little different.
That's so cool. Yeah. You know, what I also sensed is, Rose, that education like was your savior, right?
Yes.
And you excelled in high school. You excelled in university.
Yeah.
You got those three acceptance letters when you applied to different universities. All of this happened. There had to be a fire in you. How did education save you? Because I feel that was almost the turning point
yeah.
of your life before mm-hmm. to the, you know, literally going from welfare to becoming a top builder in the city. I mean, my goodness.
I know.
Because that welfare chapter was like heartbreaking. And then, but I just knew that from the person that you are and your survival instinct being so strong and your courage and your bravery, you were going to just soar, and you have.
Yeah.
But tell us how education, you know, sort of moved the needle, if you will.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. It moved the needle because I knew I didn't want to stay where I was. I knew, and I always say, I wasn't a tree, didn't have roots. I could move. So when being at school became safety, I then said, well, as long as I'm here, how much more can I do? How much more involved can I get? And I did. In high school, I did everything. I was the president of this and the president of that. And it was hall monitor. That doesn't exist anymore. I was never a teacher pet, but I did have favorite teachers. And again, they left me just simply because it was, I need to study. I'm going to get these marks. I'm going to get to the university. I'm going. And that's when I began to understand people love to talk to intelligent people, number one. So if I can hold conversations, people will take the time. That's how I'm going to get attention now. Not destruction, education.
Wow.
And then it was, how do I find my independence? And again, hearing my mother speak about a couple of her friends that were in abusive marriages because they couldn't survive on their own, because
yes.
they didn't have the studies, they didn't have a career, they didn't. They needed the money they were bringing in, and they needed the home that they had built. And I said to myself, well, I don't want that. And that was a promise I made to myself. I will only be in a place that I want to be in. I will never be in a place out of necessity again. So education got me attention, education got me independence, education got me success, education got me confidence.
It's amazing.
And I can continue, but it began with finding a safe place in a school,
yes.
and then learning that education could take me exactly to where my dreams were.
That is so incredible and so motivating to hear. We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll hear more from Rose Barroso and all about where that education took her. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And I'm talking to Rose Barroso, the author of the new memoir, Indestructible, Transforming Survival into Success. And we're talking now about her early career as a flight attendant. So you were a flight attendant for 3 years, and I've always found that so glamorous that I just want to ask you to tell us a little bit about that. What was that like? And then you had a very elevated job at the airline in corporate, you really up the ranks. So all of this is so cool. But tell us about the flight attendant years. Did you love it? Were there any really cool trips that you got to take?
So being a junior in the flight attending world, you get the trips that no one wants.
Right.
Okay. Like the ones to go down to the Caribbean. Those are, you know, everybody wants, because you're in and you're out, and you go into a really nice place. And if something goes wrong, it's warm and it's good. being a rookie and a junior, you're taking the flights that, you know, the seniors don't want. So it was, for me, I thought as well, super glamorous. I'm going to be traveling. I have this beautiful dress. And I was a flight attendant at a time where your nails had to be a certain length. Your hair had to be down or completely out of your face and no frizzies out. You had to have full makeup. You had shoes to walk to the airline, shoes within the aircraft. We had an apron. We changed. We were always changing clothes. It was like Diana Ross. Either we were in full uniform or nothing. So we couldn't just wear the dress without the handkerchief, nothing like that. So there were very, very strict rules. And I think I enjoyed the travel, but I didn't enjoy having to stay somewhere because we missed our flight back. The straw for me that broke my back was when we boarded, everyone's ready to take off and we didn't have a pilot. Our captain was MIA. So they were all running around trying to find a pilot. We were deadheading, and deadheading just means you were sitting, you weren't working, but you were coming back to your station, coming back to your town. So we ended up taking another flight that was about to leave that went to London, Heathrow. But then none of us had clothing to wear, so we couldn't get out of the hotel.
God.
And then the next day, we had to work the flight back from London to Toronto. And we had one of the big flights, and I was in the middle kitchen, and this gentleman, young man, walked by me, and somehow I ended up with his phone number in my pocket, and I did not enjoy that.
Oh, no.
He got way too close to me. And that's that, not doing it again. So when I got back, I asked to quit, and they said if I would be interested in an office job. It's not glamorous. It's not, trust me. It may look like it, but the hours are horrible. By the time you get on sitting on your flight, we already have 3 hours.
Of course.
Before you, right? And we have lots of meetings and lots of paperwork. There's lots to be done.
But it must have felt good to start getting a great paycheck.
Yes.
And to just start climbing the ladder with remarkable speed and alacrity. And I feel like that was the beginning. And then it became the office job, which was stability. And I mean, there's so many things that I could talk to you for hours about this, like the shoes. But when you gave that woman your shoes, when you sold your shoes, that low point, but also what a metaphorical moment in the book. And I want people to read Indestructible to know that story, because that's a story that will always remain with me. And it goes on and on. The car accident, what you've been through, the car accident, how you weren't able to tell your mother about it. You dismissed it. You told her in passing, like it was just, oh yeah, and I brushed my teeth. And that was a pivotal experience in your life. You've suffered heartbreak, this whole relationship with Chuck, but you kept dreaming big. You wanted to apply to CSIS. Then you find out you can't do that because something in your parent, in your father's past prevents you from doing that. It's so fascinating though. Like, it's just like, I don't know, moguls on a ski hill. It's just, you know, and it's compelling, and it's a page turner, and you just go, how much can this poor girl go through? And yet the drumbeat, the common denominator is this survival instinct, which is so impressive and so inspirational. Like, you have to give talks about this book and TED Talks, and because it's really amazing that through all of this, there was Rose who had this spark.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to survive. I'm going to succeed. And eventually I'm going to soar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. And it didn't matter what the world was throwing at me, the universe, the gods, whatever. It doesn't matter. You cry, you wipe your tears, and you have to take a moment to always think, what next? How am I getting to my finish line? What do I have to do? And you know that there was a period where I had 3 jobs. And if I had to sleep 2 hours, it didn't matter. For me, it was always, I know what I want, and this is what I have to do right now.
to get there.
Yeah.
You finally met your protector, and I think that took off some of the edge. Enter George, spelled with a J. And what was it about George that made you feel safe and good? And I know it was not just Mrs. Celeste.
Oh my God. No, it wasn't just her. God bless her. Every time I met a guy, it was always what they wanted. Can we go out? Can we do this? Can we do that? Can we do the other? And to me, that was a massive turnoff. And it's like, if every man is like this, I'm going to be alone forever, and I'm absolutely fine being alone forever. And again, you have to realize every time I met a man, my mind just went, oh, this is evil again, and I don't want it in my life, and I don't want it, and I don't want it. And when I met George, there was something about him that I didn't like, and yet it was comfortable. And I didn't like for a long time. But to have a man who was okay being your friend, although he felt otherwise, and being okay being pushed every day, and just saying to me, if you didn't have enough today, may I take you to dinner? Without any strings attached.
Pretty cool.
Right?
Pretty fabulous. And I want to tell you, I think if this ever was a movie, that scene, that proposal romantic scene of the big black bag that ends up just being a tiny little box, and you say 1,000 times yes. What was that like, that day like for you?
Funny enough, my kids only found out about that proposal a few years ago. But telling that story to my kids, I could see their face falling in love with their father even more. Like, there was like this cute little smile as they looked at him and I told the story. But so when he proposed, it was absolutely 100% unexpected, because we had never talked about it. It was just easy. We had an easy relationship and we love each other. That was enough, right? And, you know, why complicate things? And when I saw the big box, I was already annoyed, as you know. And that's for others to find out why I was annoyed. But I'm like, oh, yay. Okay, I got what I wanted, right? And then I was like, okay, wait, no. And then to open the box and look up, and he's on one knee, and wait, what is happening right now? You know, and I think I say, look at that. It just became a real boy. And that's what it felt like to me. I was becoming real, because I never thought I would have somebody in my life, let alone marry somebody, and let alone somebody who is always there for me, no matter what I said and what I did. And even today, I always say, he's that man who holds the string on the balloon, because I'm the balloon. I'm always like this. And every once in a while, George will look up and say, hey, Rose, you ready to come down? I can pull it down.
So you are a builder, a broker, a boss woman, a survivor, a powerhouse, as we said, in the luxury real estate sector, a self-made serial entrepreneur, luxury home builder, who has turned pain into power and adversity into achievement. And so at this point, Rose, you are married. You have a great job at the airline. You're very comfortable there. And you're not thinking about leaving, even though the hours are very long. You're working evenings and weekends. But George comes home one day and he tells you there's a house for sale on your street. And he asks you, what do you think about flipping it? And after some convincing, you agree. How did purchasing this first house to flip really kick off your career in luxury real estate building?
And it was a small, small property just on our street, a few houses away. Wow. And it was just he and I that did all this. But again, it was very minimal. It was paint jobs and hardware and whatever you can imagine. And evolved into bigger and bigger. And I was enjoying it.
Yes.
Right. I like this. I like what I'm doing. But I knew it was going to be difficult, not as difficult as it actually was. But then I thought, wait, if I'm working for someone else, I'm always dependent on that paycheck.
Yes.
If I turn this into my business, then there's everything that I set out to do and be.
So amazing. So you leave your corporate job at the airline, you dedicate yourself entirely to this new venture of building custom homes and, of course, looking after your beautiful babies. Your work's going well, but then again, the past always comes up to haunt us, right? You started burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah.
That started to lead to stress, mm-hmm. alcohol consumption, mm-hmm. fear of failure, panic attacks, perfectionism.
Yeah.
Even though you were making it, you were succeeding, surviving, soaring, some of the old fears and behaviors creep in. That's life. We all have that, right? And you began to drink. How did your 11-year-old daughter turn you around?
I told you, she's got some power, that girl, okay? And I saw me and her for a moment, and all of a sudden, I was so upset at my mother for not protecting me, not being a mom. And now what I'm doing is kind of protecting myself from all the stuff that I have going on, all the demons that I'm trying to, you know, bury yet again. But it's only me. I'm taking care of me only. What happened to my promise? What happened to me being better then? And I can't do this. I want my children to look at me and be so proud and talk about me when I'm dead and gone dust. This is not the way I'm going to do it. This is not the way I'm going to do it. Am I forgetting all my fears, all my stresses, all my sorrows? Yeah, but it's only momentarily that I'm doing that. What happens after? I'm embarrassing people. I can't do that to my children. I made a promise I was not going to be my mother. And that stops now.
Yeah. Wow.
I am so very proud of my kids. And if you want to sit down and push your kids to do better, to be better people, to be great in school, in life, in relationships, you can't speak from a place where you've got nothing to show. You can't talk this high if you're here. So for me, it was, I need to be better than when my mother was. I need to step up. I need to be a role model. I need to be a confidant. I want to make them proud of me. And that stops.
I remember when I was 3 years old saying to my beloved late father, "Daddy, please stop smoking." And I was crying.
See?
He had never done it. He was smoking 75 cigarettes a day. He stopped when that three-year-old little girl, right? The love of your kids.
Yeah. It's love that makes you change, makes you be better.
Is there a golden nugget that you'd like to leave people with in your beautiful book, which is really not only a great read, but I think it's actually going to help people? It's going to do exactly what you wanted it to.
There is a golden nugget. I want people to understand, especially with social media, everybody makes their life to be so beautiful, so happy, so successful, so this, and it brings the other ones down. The ones that are starting off, the ones that are uncertain of what they want. Listen, everything you see is not real. Only what you feel in your heart is real. Only how hard you can push yourself is real. And I have something that sits in my office and I read it often. If your dreams don't scare you, you're not dreaming big enough. You have to do everything with passion. You're not going to make everyone happy. You're going to find people who will tell you you're still intimidating. I still walk in rooms and people are like, "Oh, I didn't talk to you for years because you were so intimidating." And I, now that we talk, and I say, "How?" It's the way you walk into a room. I'm like, "Oh, so you judged me from the way I walked into a room. You knew nothing about me." You need to be kind. You need to be you. You need to be authentic. Don't pretend to be somebody you're not, whether it's education, job, and status. Just be you. Your people will find you. You'll have to be careful. But it's all about how hard are you willing to work for your dreams? How hard?
What advice do you have for people, women, on how to make it in a male-dominated profession? Because this is completely male-dominated, and you have just absolutely surpassed, and you've done it. Any little secret
in just a
couple of words?
The only thing I do is I never back down. I ask questions. I sit beside the men that usually will ask me the hard question because he thinks I'm going to fall on my face. I'm going to sit right beside him. And it's basically to show that I can. Before I go into a meeting, I study my notes. What am I going to, is it a client? Is it a trade? Is it the city? Who am I going to meet with? And I go over everything because I never speak without facts. And I tell that to my children, never accuse anyone without facts, never confront anyone with facts, never have a meeting without having answers. If you don't have an answer, it's super easy. Just say, unfortunately, I'm not ready to answer right now. It is never backing down.
And also, I'm going to add something to you from your book is walking away from that guy that was the jerk. Remember that guy? That's a great story. That was big. That was very, that took a lot of confidence and courage to do that, but you did.
And then I wanted to go back and punch him in the face, but that was not ladylike, right? You know what? It's very important to always look your part. Walk in with confidence because you know you know your job, you know you can, and you will. Okay. It's that confidence. If your father tells you you can't, your boyfriend, your brother, your, I don't care who it is. Okay. Still go and do it. Still go and do it. As long as it's not dangerous, but still go and do it because what's the worst that can happen? You have to say, yes, you were right. I'm sorry. That's okay. Just go and do it. I did an interview years ago for an American magazine. And this had to do with the construction side of things. And right at the end, the lady that was asking me the question said to me, may I ask two questions completely independent of what we're talking about? I'm like, yeah, sure. She goes, what keeps you grounded? What keeps you motivated? Now, let me tell you, this was probably 10 years ago, and I've never forgotten her words. What keeps you grounded? What keeps you motivated? Said to her, I'm going to answer motivated. And maybe it's not the answer you want to hear, but here's my answer. A boy and a girl. I want to prove to my daughter that anything a man does, we can do. I'm not saying better. I'm not saying worse. We can do. Okay. We just have to keep our heart, mind, everything needs to be applied to that one dream, to that one thing that we're working on. I need her to understand that there's pride that I need her to have in me and in everything she does. My son, easy again. I tell him every day, you open the door for the lady. You open the door for your mom. You open the door for your girlfriend. Number two, your girlfriend, your wife have dreams. You don't stop her. You encourage, you support, you elevate, you stop what you're doing to go help her. Okay. And last but not least, I teach my son, never stop treating your wife like your girlfriend, because the day you do, you're just friends. Okay?
Wow. You're a smart lady, Rose. Okay, there is a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. Of course, I'm going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Rose Barroso?
Bliss is getting a phone call from your daughter and saying, I just got accepted to my dream university. Bliss is sitting with your son, who's actually just going through that, telling him, you're going to get into that dream university because I did a good job.
It has been such an absolute, you're making me cry. We're both crying. It has been an absolute pleasure and an honor, Rose Barroso, to speak to you today. And to
thank you so much.
Thank you. What is the best way for us to connect with you, contact you on social media, and of course, to get a copy of your beautiful book, Indestructible, Transforming Survival into Success?
On social media, we have LinkedIn. It's at Rose Barroso Writes. Super easy. Instagram is the same, Rose Barroso Writes. You can obtain the book at indigo.ca and amazon.ca and amazon.com as well.
Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Rose Barroso, who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer-songwriters on the show. So if you're a singer, please reach out to us. Also, what did you love about today's program? Are there any guests or topics you'd like us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Just write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I help you get unstuck, gain clarity, and find your passion and purpose. Just reach out to me at findyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And all you have to do is search up Judy Liebrack. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would love to thank our wonderful guest, Rose Barroso, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Meg Ruffman, Siobhan Kylie, producer Chelsea Lockstead, associate producer Lori Quinn, Eva Shabbatai, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yannuziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. And as well, thank you to Garrett Flores for the beautiful pink roses that adorn our set each week. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.